So, Richie Neal, let's talk about Iran. You voted with the president. A lot of people were very nervous about that vote. People talked about Jewish constituents. People talked about, I mean, post-Iran vote, have you seen any either political retribution or has it basically calmed down?
Well, I think it's kind of calmed down, but not to miss the point that I approached it very judiciously, and I would not give a knee-jerk answer. And in fact, what I did was I read the agreement, went over to the House Intelligence Committee, and went through the other additional questions that have been raised, read them through, chatted with President Obama, talked to Secretary Kerry, and spent about an hour with Jack Lew, the Secretary of the Treasury, who's an old friend from the Tip O'Neill days, and met with AIPAC here in my office, and then back in Springfield, I had assured members of the Jewish community that I would hold a meeting with them and we would have a chance to talk about the agreement in all shape and form, and then I would make up my mind. And I think the fact that I didn't give the knee-jerk answer yes or no, I think it was very helpful to the dialogue, and I didn't feel as though that any political damage had been done, largely because I have a long history with the community of being attentive to many of the views that they express. And I think that they were very sincere in the questions they raised, but never once during that conversation, in both instances, did the remarks ever turn hostile. I thought that it was handled professionally, but not to miss the fact that I also think the long-term personal relationships had been very helpful.
I hear you. I'm Jewish, of course. I'm your constituent, and I was for the agreement. Did you, as a sitting politician, do you have to make an assessment politically whether or not groups are cohesive or whether there are people on both sides?
Well, I understand cohesiveness, and I also understand the reality of public life. And it is that tension, as you know, between one being a delegate or one being a trustee in public life. And I've always thought that it was closer to a blend than it was simply being the delegate and doing what people wanted in the immediate, or simply being a trustee and telling people, well, I always know better. I've always tried to balance the two, and that's why I sought opinion on it. But mindful, even with my Jewish constituents, they follow Middle East issues very carefully, and they always have. And they're very well-versed and well-read, and at the same time, they are also very mindful of daily occurrences, and they're the first to speak up in support of Syrian refugees, for example.
Interesting.
They're the first to speak up in making sure that people in the Middle East that might not share their views are treated in a humanitarian way when it comes to relief organizations. So I balance all of those things, and then I try, again, very patiently, and understanding that legislative skill oftentimes is an art form, and never walking into the room when I meet with groups insisting that I know more than they do, as happy to hear what they have to say.
Speaking, since you've opened the door, Counselor, do you think that the United States should take more Syrian refugees?
Yes, I do. And I don't think we're going to have any choice, Alan, and I'll tell you why. Whether people want to know it or not, what happened in Iraq with the war has so unsettled the Middle East. And then, if you recall, just 2 or 3 years ago, we were all prepared to celebrate the Arab Spring. Well, it's more Arab chaos. And we're going to end up taking more Iraqi refugees. The war still is not going the way we've been told that it was going to go. And the result has been that many of these refugees now are seeking some sort of resettlement in Eastern Europe, and from Eastern Europe it's on to Western Europe, and eventually it's going to be on to America. And I think that the fact that we bear some responsibility for what happened, and understanding that we also are going to have to resettle Iraqis who cooperated with us, we're going to have to pay great attention to these issues. One of the things that's important to remember about refugee status is the difference between a refugee and a migrant.
We're hearing a great deal about that. Right, go ahead.
Right, the threat to the refugee is more immediate. So I understand the security checks and all of those things that we're going to have to undertake. And at the same time, the other lesson I think that comes from many of these migratory patterns or refugee patterns, when things settle down in the homeland, almost half of those individuals return to the homeland. And I think that that's something we should be careful of to understand as well.
Well, you know, there's an old saying, if you break it, you own it.
That's precisely what Colin Powell told President Bush.
Well, we broke it, didn't we?
We broke it.
And so now we have a responsibility. And we lecture the Europeans on their responsibilities, but it doesn't look good if we don't do anything, I suppose.
No, I mean, I think America still is the Pope noted, I think America is still the leading light in the world as to these sorts of answers. And I think that we have, in our history, there's been certainly conflict, but not to miss the point, on a humanitarian basis, we've always been willing to do our share.
Richie Neal, I'd love to talk to you about something far more local, the Springfield mayoral election. What happened there?
Well, I think Mayor Sarno obviously far outpaced the field. I think that he got almost 75% of the vote during the primary. I'm also noting that there's a phenomenon that's happened across Massachusetts that I think we all need to be mindful of, and that is voter turnout in the old cities. There was a time, probably I think until the late 60s and early 70s, where the urban voting pattern tended to be the one that dominated Democratic politics. And then beginning probably in the early 70s, I usually use the Dukakis-Quinn race for governor in 74 in the Democratic primary in Massachusetts, where I think for the first time the suburbs really began to take over the process, largely because of the turnout. And you can see today where the turnout in Springfield during the primary was 7%. Boston had a small turnout, even though there were not a lot of ballot candidates. And in Worcester, you can see this pattern now across the state in the old cities. And I think that what's happened is that the suburban independent voter, in a lot of ways, has replaced the old urban voter, who at one time was tied to the union, who at one time was tied to what was about to happen at City Hall. And obviously the patronage system was an important part of that. But not to miss the point that the turnout now in the suburbs around Springfield and around Worcester and around Boston is substantially higher than the turnout in the old cities.
Is that a reflection of just demographic?
I think it's a reflection of demographics. And I also think that it also highlights the difficulty that you have getting people to show up at the polls who might find themselves in or near poverty.
Sure. I guess that's always been that way. Would you consider Mayor Sarno you were mayor of Springfield, and you've been followed by others. Do you consider him to be a follower of yours, Richie Neal?
Yeah, I do, and I think he's been a very good mayor in the sense that I think there are notable accomplishments on the manufacturing front. I think that he does a good job of reconciling the racial divide. And I also think that there's another part of him that it stands out in my mind, and I think that's the sincerity level. I think he's very sincere, and I think even when he feels as though he's done something that people might not agree with, I think that he sincerely finds himself in disagreement with them. So I think on those fronts, I think that one of the, you know, when you're the mayor of a big city, or you're the mayor of particularly an old New England city, the job is really akin to being the conductor of the orchestra. And there are all kinds of instruments in that orchestra. And you have to know who's playing out of tune, and you have to know who's following the cadence, and you have to understand that the musical score is the one that has to be adhered to. And I think that it's a very tough job for mayors, and that's the reason that there are so few mayors that ever get to serve in Congress.
It's a hard job, isn't it?
It's a hard job every day because you always have to choose between three people or three projects, and in some cases, three proposals. And the difficulty is that the person, the project, or the proposal that you don't pick, they come to conclude that they were not treated fairly.
Right.
Oftentimes, what they really mean is they weren't treated favorably.
Richie Neal, always a great pleasure to talk with a guy who has been a mayor, who's been a senior congressman now. I hate to say that to you, but in terms of respect for you and the amount of knowledge you've gained, it's just extraordinary to have you with us. And thank you so much. When we come back the next time.
Thank you, Alan.
When we come back the next time, let's talk about the Export-Import Bank, okay?
Happy to do it.